Okay, what's today? July 18th.
Rabbi, I have to tell you that I'm so impressed with your family. Have a family like that.
Thank you. Baruch Hashem. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, we started last week talking a little bit about the importance of Torah study and the way Torah study, ideally, to make an impact on a person and to make an impression on a person and to be able to change a person, should be done with joy. It's very difficult for someone to sit down and study and spend, whether it's minutes or hours, when a person is not enjoying it. You know, I want to tell you that when I say we don't use the term heaven and hell, that's not the term that's used for the afterlife in Jewish terminology. But there is an afterlife, and there's Gan Eden. Well, that's one terminology that's used. Olam HaNeshamos, the world of souls. Olam Haba, the world to come. And then there's something called Gehenna, which is purgatory. And that's, we've explained in the past, that's a hospital for the soul. I remember one time hearing a parable that things in life are not, it's not black and white. What I'm trying to point out is that a person can be, let's just say, the parable that was used is where people are sitting at a long table on two sides of a table with a beautiful meal in front of them. And the only thing is that they don't have utensils, right? And the only utensil that they have is they have a long spoon that's tied to their wrists. And that's the only thing they can eat, but that doesn't help them because they have the plate right in front of them. Thank you. So those who are in Gan Eden, those who are in heaven, sort of, they figured it out. They feed the people across the table from them. So they're able to enjoy everything. The other ones are just stuck there, and they can't eat. And there's nothing that they can get from them. The idea behind that particular parable is that heaven and hell can be the same thing. But if you're a giving person, then what you do in this life in terms of giving will build you up. If you're selfish, you'll never learn how to make use of many of the things that are out there in the world. But the same, in the same idea, it can be used for Torah learning, that they say that to go to the greatest lecture in the world, and this is only a parable, that heaven and hell are the same thing. You go to the greatest Torah lecture in the world. So for those who loved studying Torah, for them, it's Gan Eden, right? For those who have no connection to it, having to sit through a lecture like that is hell. and it's like that in reality with all midos, with all traits, character traits as well. God did not create good and bad character traits. He created character traits. And different people are different, given different measures of certain character traits. Some people have more of a tendency to be angry. Some people have more of a tendency to be patient. And the idea is to work with them and make them useful and make them good. But when I say there is no such thing as good and bad, there is no good and bad character trait. Because envy can be used to be envious of another's spirituality so that you want to grow to be like that. Or it can be used for envy, which destroys your life. Patience is a great virtue, but sometimes patience turns into laziness, right? Anger is almost on the exception because it's at the end of the pole. But anger is the one thing we're required to stay from at all extremes. However, to show anger sometimes, to display anger when things are wrong, not to lose it, because once you lose it, the Talmud says, like, you worship idols. You're not using your intellect anymore. You're basing totally on emotions. Usually, when you do things just out of emotion, it doesn't turn out so good, right? You have to have your intellect involved in that as well. So all traits are like that, and the joy that one feels in Torah learning comes from sitting down and studying it, and then reviewing and spending more time. I have to tell you, personally, I'm There are times where I really enjoy it, and there are times where I'm getting antsy, you know, right here. I have no zitzflesh. There are different methods that were taught in yeshiva on how to work on that to make it enjoyable. But you see that the truly great people, some to an extreme, and I don't say a negative extreme, their love of Torah learning was so great, it's like they couldn't get enough of it. Reb Nosson Tzvi Finkel, the great Rosh Hashiva, who passed away, 6 years ago? The great Rosh Hashiva of the Mir, are you raising your hand? Or are you? Great Rosh Hashiva of the Mir, who had the terrible, we've talked about him, who had the terrible, terrible Parkinson's disease. And those of us, were you with us? We visited him in Eretz Yisrael. He said he would see us. And then he was so sick, he was lying down in his bed and shaking. But he said, I gave my word that I would see this group. And he didn't. He let us come in and say hello to him. And he was lying in his bed in his study. And he shook each of our hands and gave us each a blessing. It was something to behold. The last year of his life, his body was racked with Parkinson's. He didn't want to take medication because he thought it would affect his mind. And he'd rather that have his body in pain and shaking, and I mean, it was something that was difficult to watch. I watched him once davening, standing at the front during Mincha in the mirror, and his body was just shaking back and forth. But he didn't want to lose his ability to learn and to think. And during those years, he was still learning 12 hours a day. He was still building 5 or 6 buildings for the mirror, raising hundreds of millions of dollars, traveling around. He was like superhuman. And he said to somebody once, he said that I think perhaps God gave me this Parkinson's, he said, because I enjoyed learning Torah so much. He said, why should I get any reward for it? It's just, I enjoy it so much. Now, I'll talk about that in a moment. So he said, therefore I got this, it was a test for me to see if I was going to learn even when my body told me not to. And he did. I mean, to say he passed with flying colors would be an understatement. Yeah. There are other great rabbis who told other rabbis that they enjoy it so much that they feel that why should there be any spiritual reward? And the answer is because that is the greatest level of learning. When you're enjoying learning it, that's the greatest level. We spoke about it in terms of enjoying doing something. When you enjoy doing a mitzvah, that shows that you're doing it out of love, that you really want to do it, that that's a positive thing. You do it begrudgingly, you only do it because you have to, and then maybe. Yes?
Is there a difference between envy, which you just spoke about, and jealousy? Or are they brothers?
Brothers. That's a good word, I like that. I don't think that they're the exact same thing, but let somebody else help you out with the definition. I don't think that they're the exact same thing. In English, are they synonymous in English? Jealousy and envy?
I think envy is more polite.
Envy is more polite?
Yes, it's more considerate.
Okay, Marty had his hand up, and we'll get to you, Rick.
So I think Dennis Prager gave a differentiation where jealousy is, he has a beautiful wife, I hope I can find a wife as beautiful as her. Whereas envy is, I want his wife.
Okay.
I think it's
the other
way around.
I do too. So, whatever it is, doesn't matter whichever one it is, they're two separate things.
Right.
Right?
Okay. Two separate things.
Rick, let Rick. Rick.
No, I think they're two separate things. It doesn't matter which one you're
right.
Putting in which box, but they're two separate things.
Okay. Neither of them is very good. Not healthy for your emotion.
It's human.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, all negative traits are human. You work on them.
Yeah.
Right. Yes, that's correct.
You want to get Google's answer?
Oh, Google's answer.
Right. Yeah. Excuse me. In this class, we call him Rabbi Google.
The main difference between envy and jealousy is that envy is the emotion of coveting what someone else has, while jealousy is the emotion related to fear that something you have will be taken away by somebody else.
That's totally different, though. Okay.
Oh, that is way different.
Michael?
Okay,
it's fine.
Yeah. Neither of them are good.
Yeah.
What in Hebrew, the Torah says, lo sachmod, which I think in the 10th commandment is don't be envious. The mission and ethics of our fathers, which says that jealousy drives a person from the world, that's kina. That's a different word. There are different words in Hebrew.
It's so interesting to me that that jealousy or envy is very destructive, just like lust and whore. It's just kind of interesting to me that Hashem gave us those emotions that are just so...
Not at all.
They're so destructive that it's just kind of interesting that it's obviously something that we all have to deal with.
Right, so any trait can be destructive. Some are more than others.
Well, maybe
right?
They're on the top of my list. I don't know.
So the idea is that's how you grow, by overcoming those things, and it's what we're going to talk about more. How does one overcome envy or jealousy? We're going to actually talk about that a little bit today in a different context, but I think it'll relate to this as well. Yes, Zaina?
Well, some things are learned. I understand that. But no two babies are born with the same character.
That's correct. As we, everybody has different character traits, and nobody has it in the same measure, for sure. So the idea is, those that are positive, you work to keep and strengthen. And those that are negative, you work to make better. Those that are negative, you have to learn to control. And that can come through Torah learning and learning what it is that God wants of us. But it has to be learning with joy. If somebody, just as an example, people tell me throughout the years that they've gained and they've grown from, let's say, coming to this class on Thursday, right? If somebody would be forced to come here, chances are that they would not have the same personal growth as they would otherwise. Nobody paid $1 million to come here and therefore feels that they have to come, and nobody's grandmother's forcing them to come either. Right? So, to the level that his mother used to make him come.
No, I made my
okay,
mother come.
I'm just kidding.
Oh my gosh.
You know, there are some stories, and there are many stories told about some of our greats, and I tell them, even though I'm not there, because I admire these stories to the point where I'm hoping that, you know, I'll strive for it a little bit. Rabbi Elazar Shach, he died in 2002, I think. He was the head of the Panovich Yeshiva. He's actually the leader of the whole Yeshiva Haredi world in the last 20, 30 years of his life. He was a great Torah scholar, to say the least. But he loved learning, and he was a tremendous masmid. He was diligent in his learning. The stories from his youth and on, you know, continue. Once in the late 40s or early 50s, it was a snowstorm in Yerushalayim, and the streets were empty. And somebody was coming to visit Reb Velvo Soloveitchik, the Rav of Brisk, who had moved to Eretz Yisrael right around the war. And he saw in the distance the streets were deserted. The removal of the snow today in Jerusalem ain't so hot, but back then in the 40s or 50s was not, you know. So the streets were deserted. And this fellow is approaching the Brisker Rav's house, and he's trudging through the snow, and he sees, like, there's a meshugana who's dancing in the snow. You know, as he comes closer, he sees this Rabbi Shach. and he looks at him and says, "What are you doing? Like, what's going on here?" You know, he said, he was a disciple of the Brisker Rav. Brisker Rav was one of the greatest innovators and insights in the Torah. And when Rav Shach studied with him, he felt such joy, especially when the Brisker Rav would give a new insight or interpretation. Rav Shach said, when I learn from him, I'm so happy. My soul just floats and it dances. He says, but I know I look like a meshugana if I start dancing every time. This time I left his house, he said, I'm in seventh heaven. I thought there would be nobody on the streets. There would be nobody who sees me. So therefore I started to dance, because that's how I felt.
Wow.
Yeah, so... What a feeling of joy. I mean, you know, I will tell you a story that with Rav Noach Weinberg and my Rosh Yeshiva. Well, Rav Noach was a Rebbe of mine also, in a great extent. I've told you many times that Rabbi Weinberg, he had four failures of opening yeshivas before he was successful with Esha Torah. And if he would have closed shop after two or three and said, I'm done, Nobody would have blamed him. But he used to tell us that all the time. You know how many times I failed? You can't give up. You can't give up. You just pick yourself up. You got to. King Solomon says it. The righteous is the one who falls seven times and keeps on getting up. It's like, if the last hit, you're still standing, you're okay. It doesn't matter how many times you fall. You just got to keep on getting up. That's life. So, but one time after one of his failures, he just wanted to get away from it. This must have been in the 1960s, in the early, mid-60s. So where did he wanted to get away from it. He just wanted to clear his mind, not be, you know, disturbed by outside things. And he decided to go down to Netivot. Now, Netivot is where I went to yeshiva. In Yeshiva HaNegev, at that time they didn't have a building, they had a shack that they were learning out of, and it was known, that yeshiva was known for its great diligence, for its hasmada, and Reb Noach wanted to get away and just sit and learn without anybody. But so where he went to Yeshiva HaNegev, and one night, it was around midnight, maybe 1 o'clock, my Rosh Yeshiva, Reb Yisrael HaMeir, was going, strolling through the town. He used to, at midnight, go and check on his students, make sure they went to sleep on time, just see how they were doing, whatever. Also, he was very careful for his whole life, till old age. He had diabetes. He took long walks all the time. Sometimes it was at midnight, you know, so he took these long walks. And he passes by the little shack, maybe 30, 40 guys in the yeshiva. When I was, it was 230, but at that time, maybe there were 50 guys. I don't know exactly what year it was. And he sees, in the middle of the night, the yeshiva bachrim and Reb Noach, they're singing and dancing. And he walks in. Now, if this were a Hasidic yeshiva, you would say, oh, they had a good l'chaim, they told a good story, they got up, they're dancing. That's, what were the yeshiva bachrim doing dancing at midnight? So he came in. And he was shocked because Rabbi Weinberg was there, young Rabbi Weinberg. I don't know if he ever had a black beard. I think it is bar mitzvah he had a white beard. a lot younger Rabbi Weinberg. And he walked in and he said, what's going on here? And they told him, he said, Rabbi Noach Weinberg, and we were trying to figure out this difficult passage in the Rambam. Maimonides were trying to figure out. We were extending ourselves. And suddenly somebody came up with an insight. And everybody was so happy, we just exploded into dance. It's like the other story. So my Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Sofer, said, really? What was it that you learned? So they told him. So then he joined the dance. And it was just, for them, it was like such an incredible thing. But it's an inner joy that unless you experience that, it's almost hard to experience what that is unless you have that type of experience. Because when the neshama rejoices, when the soul rejoices, it's the type of rejoicing that can't be experienced by anything else. It can only sometimes manifest itself in the body in different ways. But it's experienced inwardly. That's also why when you do something, and especially if other people don't know about it, there's a different satisfaction when you do something you know is really good and you know you overcame. Some of the greatest days in our lives can be when we had a challenge and we overcame it and we really struggled and we did well. There's a tremendous satisfaction in that that's much more satisfying than a good day at the office. When your soul conquers, that's your growth. There's a certain satisfaction. There's different levels. But when you do something and you feel good about it, that's one level of satisfaction. Yeah, there's all different kinds of levels of this. And our great people, you know, who were Torah scholars, they embodied this type of joy. I want to read to you one thing. I know you had these sheets last week. If you still have them, it's not that important. Page 98. I know. I took them. I wasn't going to read the whole thing in going through it. But on page 98, if you want to see this, those of you who learned from Strive for Truth years ago, I studied this with you, Rabbi Dessler, who turned out to be one of the great Musar giants of. He lived from about 1900 to 1954, maybe late 1800s to 1954. He passed away young. He writes that in Lithuania, there was a widespread custom. People would get up in the middle of the night, Friday night. Remember, especially in the winter, it got dark very early. They would have their Shabbos meal. They would go to sleep for a few hours, and they would get up at midnight, and they would learn till daybreak. So here he is, a child. Here he is, a child, and he's writing about his memories. Of childhood. He said, childhood memories crowd in. I remember how when I was a boy of 9, my revered father and my uncle Gedalia used to get up around midnight on those long winter Friday nights and learn together for about 9 hours at a stretch until the morning service. Now, I guess it got dark late. They had to wait, you know, in the morning, because in Lithuania, they didn't go to daven late. They got, you know, so if they davened at 9, it's because it probably got light close to then. Mother used to get up too, and she would study Midrash, Nachmanides, and the Malbim on the weekly Torah portion. When she came down, it was like a yontif for me. For she used to serve us cups of steaming hot coffee accompanied by some very special and delicious tasting latkes. This is what she would serve them at midnight on Friday night. He also writes there she had delicious cakes that she made. The reason Rabbi Dessel is writing this is because he's writing about the joy that he had in learning, but he said as a boy of 9, the latkes and the cakes were a good enticement that helped get him out of bed. And he writes there about sometimes you use a carrot to get you to do the right thing, and eventually, if you continue doing it, you can do it without the carrot. Right? Because the joy of the learning, or whatever it is that you're doing, comes by itself. But you see this little boy, how much he experienced, and how much he was able to observe the experience. I mean, you know what it is to sit on something for 9 hours straight? Today in our society, most people, 9 minutes is like unbelievable. You know what people's attention span is? It doesn't make sense. I think it's in the negative. And here, the people who study, they can just go hours and hours and hours on end. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, he was the great Rav of Brisk. Remember I told you before about the Brisker Rav, Velvo Soloveitchik? This was his father. He died in 1920 in Brisk, in Lithuania. Brisk, I think, was the third largest Jewish city in Lithuania. He was the Rav of the town, and he felt that the Rav's job was to take care of the widows and the orphans and the poor, of which there were many, and to make sure that others are helped. Of course, major, major halachic issues sometimes came to him, but he said that's not the job of the rabbi. He had a dayan. He hired a judge to decide the halachic questions. His name was Rav Zelig Grieger, and he hired him. And Rav Chaim dealt with people all the time, but he learned. His main occupation in life was learning. So one time somebody saw him, and he was covered with soot. He was covered with soot, and they said, Rebbe, what happened? And he had loved learning so much, he said, the people were coming, and I was nonstop. I didn't have any time to learn. So he went into his chimney, and he sat there for 6 hours thinking something through. He got lost in time. 6 hours sitting in the chimney. It wasn't lit at the time. He came out, he was full of soot. We have stories of some of the great, great minds and the people, you know, I guess this would work. You know, we have a ladder. You know, there's ladders on the bookshelves that go back and forth. They would go up to the top, and they would take out a book and look at it, and they'd sit there for 3-4 hours, forgetting where they were, just becoming engrossed in the Torah thought. These are great people, but that's the joy that they had in the study of Torah. And that should be something. Here is where envy, I guess if I admire it. To say I'm envious of it means I would try probably to go for the same thing. I'm not quite there. I definitely admire it. Whether I'm really envious of it, because apparently my actions show that I'm not that jealous or envious of it. But I do admire it.
There you go.
Go ahead.
Earlier you mentioned that the boys are taught how to enjoy their studies.
Right. What I said, I didn't explain. One of the things that is taught, and this is, first of all, try not to interrupt with idle chatter, which is, I remember when I started studying one-on-one, with a chavrusa, right, at age 14 or 15. It's very, very tempting to get caught up in another conversation, and you just wind up, whether it was the Yankees or the Mets, or whatever it was, right? Very easy. It's really hard. You have to sort of try to train yourself and force yourself from a young age to do that. That's number one. Number two, and this is something as a young person which is really challenging, but if one succeeds at this, then it's almost a guarantee. And that is review, 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 review. Why is it so hard for a young person? It's hard for an older person also. But a young person doesn't believe he's going to forget. Right? And they want what's new and exciting. So I've studied this. I just spent a week on it. Why do I have to review it? I just spent time learning it. Let's move on. Well, come, just think about it. Come test time, I have to go back to that. You ever? I sometimes try this with food. You know, my mother always told me eat slowly. Why? So the simple reason is that you eat slower, it digests quicker, then you don't have to eat more because it takes time for the stomach to feel satiated, right? You eat it slowly, then you won't eat as much. There's actually something far greater in eating slowly, in chewing. When you chew something well, you usually get the flavor much more. You just take a bite of an apple, and then another bite. Like, you ever eat dinner? I don't know, maybe you don't have this issue, but sometimes you eat something, you realize you just ate, but you didn't really enjoy it, right? When you take something and you chew it over and over, the flavor that's inside comes out more and more. And by the way, you don't have to chew your cuds for this to be true, okay? But does it? Try it with a fruit, with a tasty fruit. Try it with a piece of meat. Try it with anything. Usually that'll happen. With learning, every time you learn, you always see something new. I'm astounded. You know, and it's been a good lesson for me. You know why? Because sometimes, after years, and it's not like I sit there every day that this question is bothering me, but whenever I come up on the topic, I have this question, and suddenly one day, you're studying something, whoa, it's right there. Here's the answer. It wasn't there 40 years ago? Of course it was there. You just didn't see it. Right? So, first of all, it's a good thing. People say, it's impossible. It doesn't make sense. You know what I say? When somebody says that something in the Torah doesn't make sense, there's no thing. It doesn't make sense to me. Or I don't understand it. Not that it doesn't make sense. But if you find an answer for something after many years or many months of thinking about it, it should be a good lesson for you. Oh, the answers are there. I just haven't discovered it yet. It should be a good lesson. So when one chews over the Talmud or the Chumash or whatever it is that they're reviewing over and over, every time they're going to see new insights, it becomes sweeter and sweeter and sweeter. So Gary, that's really the answer to the question. That is how one would come to the joy of learning by review. We don't like to review. Like, I know that already. Let's go to something new. That's our nature. So that's how you come to it. Somebody had a...
Me.
Yeah, sorry, Sean.
Envy, jealousy are two different things and they're slightly different.
Have we discussed that today?
Our commandment is thou shalt not covet. And what's the difference between... I mean, there's... minor differences between the three, or are they major?
Well, I think one of the things that was mentioned is a very important one. And they're both forbidden. I'll tell you why in a moment. One is to covet something, to want something. You want that thing. You want that thing. And sometimes, depending on how far, you will stop at nothing to get it. I mean nothing to get it. That's a terrible thing. Then there's jealousy. I have to have what that person has. Or that person can't. That makes a person meshuggah, because there's always be somebody who has something that you don't have, whether it's monetarily or in looks or in this or whatever it is. So that can make you meshuggah also. They're both bad. And they do not allow you to grow spiritually. And one can make you meshuggah. The other one can totally destroy you when you think you have to have the thing that other person has.
But the commandment is covet.
Okay, so that's one commandment. Then you study the Torah and you study the Mishnah and you see other things that jealousy drives a person from this world. So one is covet. Covet would seem, the Talmud has a whole discussion, does coveting include just an internal thing that I want that, or is it only if I act on it? What are you asking me? Yes, coveting is forbidden, regardless whether it means acting on it or just internally. If it's just internal, it can make a person crazy. It can destroy a person's life. Therefore, it is something that you need to work on. So how do you work on it? What do you do?
Every morning I say, happiness is not having what you want, but
wanting
what
you have. Okay, that's one way. If you can, but there's a source to that. Go ahead.
So coming full circle on this topic, I think the goal would be to be happy with your lot. If you're happy with your lot, then you don't need any jealousy.
Right, so how does one...
What you said, it's the same thing. But I mean, full circle of what we learn here. And
yes, be happy with your lot. So what I want to talk about now today is how to go about that. So, okay.
I got the concept.
Yes, okay, good.
If you're happy with your lot, then you don't need to have envy or
correct.
Jealousy.
Well, I'm from a very young age, I was taught the most important thing a Jew person is your character. And as you're talking about Musar and all the character buildings, that everybody has all these emotions and qualities, and we tend to forget. Even the most learned person, I was always taught, tends to forget it. We go into denial. And it is only through the Torah, and somebody who knows the Torah better than you, that you see that he would call them gems of wisdom. You can look over and he'd say, every year for hundreds and thousands of years, we do the same thing every year, the same holidays, the same thing, and every time it's read, there's something different that comes out.
And hopefully you're a year above the one you were last.
Right, but he said that is what builds character, is you have to keep going back to even the thing like respect and kindness, and it's the Torah that can embellish this and make you see it brighter so you can actually take it into you.
And make it part of you. Good, very good. That's why when we don't speak about Lashon Hara, not when we don't speak, but when we don't speak about Lashon Hara, for a long time, it tends just to become unimportant. The more you talk about it, not the more you speak Lashon Hara. The more you talk about not speaking Lashon Hara, so the more aware you are. So this night, yes, David.
So I covet and am jealous of your Torah, wisdom, and knowledge. So
if you really were, then you would make an effort to do more. That's what I was saying about the joy that those people have. I admire it, to say that I'm really coveting or jealous. However, if you were really envious of it, then that's where the trait of envy would be a positive thing, because you would work on accomplishing that.
Well, maybe I'm trying to make a point, and maybe the difference is that, an example, I envy it, I'll work for it, toward it, maybe I'll acquire it, or I'm lazy, I won't, and I dislike you because you have it and I don't.
Okay, I got it. I got it. That could be a jealousy thing. Yeah. That could be a jealousy thing. Whether it's money, looks, health, character traits, things, I think the core is that the person finds peace in life, certainly what Michael and Sheldon said, but the core of that is knowing and acknowledging that everything that you have is from the Almighty. To be envious of another's looks, and it's the same being happy with what you have. I'm going to make the best with what the Almighty gives me. It's not a fatalistic attitude at all. I can try to have more, but not because somebody else has it, or because I have to have them. I'm going to do my best. If it's meant to be, I can only put forth the efforts. The results are going to come from the Almighty. We have two concepts in the Hebrew language, I'm going to use the translation, but the translation doesn't do it justice. The Hebrew words are emuna and bitachon. We translate emuna or emuna as being faith. Okay, I don't want to go into the talk about faith now. Bitachon is trust. Okay, security. It's not by accident. Faith is in theory. Trust is in action, right? Faith is, yes, I believe that you will take care of me. Trust is when you're hanging over the cliff and I tell you to let go of the rope and you'll be fine. Okay? Now, that's an extreme example. I wouldn't recommend it necessarily, you know. But faith is knowing that Hashem, talking about Hashem takes care of everything. Trust is when something bad happens, you don't curse your luck. You don't curse what happens to you. You say, this is what was destined for me. I did my best. I gave it my best shot. If it was meant to be for me, it would have happened. And that people who live like that can live with equanimity, without envy, without jealousy, and even when suffering happens, and I'm not talking physical suffering. It's another conversation within the same conversation. A person can live to accept things, not again as fatalistic. It's meant to be, and then it happens. But to say, this is my lot. and I'm not going to let it deter me from my mission in life, from what I'm trying to accomplish on a daily basis, from having a relationship with Hashem. And of course, in really bad situations and really trying situations, the challenge is much more difficult. But we know that there are people who get through those situations and don't lose their trust in Hashem and don't lose their faith and can continue in life by knowing that things don't happen by accident, by knowing that what's meant to be theirs was theirs, and what they have was given exactly for them. So trying to be somebody else, trying to have what somebody else has, that wasn't meant for you. If you don't have it, it wasn't meant for you. And the other type of thing, not envious that I want, and I appreciate what Marty said in terms of his distinction of those things, to want something, not necessarily what the other person has, but I have to have that, you can make yourself meshuggah. Most of a person's tzaras in life, not all, but most of a person's tzaras in life come from negative midos. I have to have this. I want this. You speak poorly about other people. I'm jealous of this person. I don't have patience. I get angry. These things not only cause physical illness, they cause me anxiety. They cause me to lose sleep. They cause me to have ulcers. They cause so many different things because I can't control my midos and I allow them to destroy me. There's enough tzaras on earth without that. But we add to our tzaras terribly, terribly, terribly when we live with this thing of I have to have, and it's also tremendous arrogance. It's as if, how could it happen to me? When a person has a perfect life, nobody has a perfect life, but when from the outside you think it is a person's life, but if a person were to have a perfect life, the danger behind that is when something doesn't go right. Me? It happened to me? You did that to me? How dare you say that to me? That's a lot of arrogance. And that's a lot of thinking that, you know, you're deserving. The Talmud says one thing a person should never say to somebody else when they're in an argument with somebody else, even if they know that they're right. Don't ever say, let God open up your books and let's see who he determines is right. Let's see. Because once you say to somebody else, open up, then you are putting yourself in a position. Okay, you want to open up? Maybe we'll open you up. Let me tell you, I don't know if anybody is in such a position that they can be sure that it looks so pretty in their book. And you don't want to do that. So when somebody else has something that was meant for them, it was their lot. You know, and we make mistakes, we do things for the wrong reason, and then we blame God. Also, besides what I said before, a lot of the times, you know, we have sorrows, we do things, and we tie God's hands behind his back, and then we want to know why he does something to us. Now, of course, there's many types of cancers and stuff like that that happen without smoking, but a person could smoke his whole life, and then how could I get lung cancer? Yeah. So a lot of the ills that have befallen humanity is we tie God's hands behind his back, as it were, and we expect him just to say, all right, forget what I did, you just have your job to do, don't worry about me. That's not the way it works in this world. So knowing that the vicissitudes of life, the pluses and the minuses, are given to me by God as areas to grow and to challenge, and this is really important. If somebody insults me, whether it's publicly, privately, it could be they did the wrong thing and it was wrong of them, they should not have done it. But this is important and it may be difficult to accept. Even if they're 100% wrong in doing it, my business is to look at it as a test as to how I'm going to respond. That challenge was put in front of me knowing how I'm going to respond. If I knew that by not getting angry when somebody does something to me, there was a world of eternity of Olam Haba waiting for me. If I was able to focus on that, if I was able to focus on I have such a juicy piece of Lashon Hara to say about somebody, and all the people around me are going to think that I'm great because I'm reporting this. And it's hard for me, and I withhold what I'm going to say, and I'm thinking to myself, the Almighty doesn't want me to do this, whether you think about the reward that's there for you or not. I think the feeling that you'll have to afterwards, after it settles, may be enough for you, but even if it's not, if you knew that there was a pot of gold on the other end of the rainbow, of not speaking this Lashon Hara, would you not speak it? Of course not. If we were able to know that when we're set with challenges, I'm not losing my temper, I'm not blowing it, I'm not getting angry, it was meant as a test for me, and how I'm going to respond is going to determine my future, I would respond differently. And I want to close with the following story. It's a challenging story, but the Gemara says, it's spoken about throughout Jewish literature. Suffering, whether it's, God forbid, terrible pain that racks the body and the mind, or going into your pocket looking for a dime and instead pulling out a nickel and having to go back in, which is not very intense. But it's aggravating. It's aggravating. Or, you know, the GPS taking you the wrong way, taking you, God forbid, 2 blocks out of your way. Right? Or you're waiting online and missing the sale that would have saved you 15 cents a pound on watermelon. You know, like, whatever it may be. All those kinds of suffering and aggravation have the power in it to be able to atone for our shortcomings, for our avarice. Every bit of suffering, not just physical, emotional, physical, monetary, we should be aware. And if we would know that, it would make it much easier to be able to accept. You stub your toe. Oh, okay, I don't know what it was. Did anybody see the movie Ghost with Patrick Swayze and right, and Demi Moore? I don't remember the whole thing. There's one scene that everybody remembers, but there's another scene where they had these black and white spiritual things, like these ghosts that were coming down. They had the evil forces. They were black, and then you had the white, and they were at battle with each other. I don't even remember at what point in the film it was. So I'm going to tell you a story. If you remember that part of the movie, it's just an imagery. Okay? On Mount of Olives, on Har HaZeisim, close to the grave of the great Orach Chaim HaKadosh, Reb Chaim Ibn Attar, there's a man buried there. His name was Reb Shalom Sharabi. I used to go to the Orach Chaim's grave when I was 18, 19 years old, on the way to my grandparents who were buried on Mount of Olives. So I used to stop over at the Orach Chaim. And next to him was this great Kabbalist, Reb Shalom Sharabi. And he was, I don't know where he was born. He was, I think, a Yemenite rabbi. He was living in Eretz Yisrael, I think, in the 19th, maybe the 20th century, I don't remember. And the story goes that there was a man who once came to him. This man was afflicted with tsaros, with terrible tsaros. He wasn't making a living, his children were not well, his wife was giving him a heart. He had a very difficult life, and he was coming to the rabbi. He wanted, Rabbi, pray for me, give me a blessing, give me something to get out of this hole. So he comes to the house, and the Rebbetzin comes out. He says, how can I help you? He says, I need to speak to the rabbi. So he says, the rabbi's busy now, please have a seat. Wait, when the rabbi is ready, he'll come out to you. So he sits there, and without a sermon, he falls asleep. He falls asleep. And this is what the man reported afterwards. This is the story that he told as he's waiting for Avshalom Sharabi. He falls asleep and he has a dream. And in the dream, he's standing before the grand court in heaven. He's being judged. He's being judged. So, for his life, up until that point. So what they started, the ministering angels, there's a scale there. Again, there's just an imagery, right? I don't know. There's a scale, and they're bringing out his mitzvahs, and there's so many mitzvahs that he has, and they pile it up, and the scale just goes, you know, like, oh, man, he's feeling really good about himself. And after all the mitzvahs are there, they start to bring out everything else that he's done in his life. The black angels are coming out, you know, on the scale. And all of a sudden, like as time goes by, the scale, suddenly the side that had gone kerplunk to the ground is starting to rise and to rise, right? And after a little while, he's watching, and he's petrified. because he sees his life, now the black side is outweighing the other side, and he's doomed. Right? So then they say, wait, you forgot to bring out all his suffering that he had in his life. So they start to put every single bit of suffering on the side of the mitzvahs. Because why? Because that's eradicating the other side. Yes, that's an atonement. And it starts to go like this, and suddenly the mitzvahs start to go down again. You know, they're getting heavier and heavier and heavier. And when it's like, you know, close, they say, aren't there any more sufferings? They say, yes, bring out a little more suffering, a little more aggravation. And finally, before the scales are even, the negative side is still outweighing the other side. That's it. There's no more mitzvahs. There's no more suffering. And in his dream, he starts yelling, please, a little more suffering, a little more aggravation, a little more pain. Just put it out, find me a little more. And then he feels a tap on his shoulder.
It's the rabbi.
And it's the Rashash, Rabbi Shalom Sharabi. And he says, can I help you? And the man says, no, thank you. I think I've got my answer. It's not easy to live like that. But if one understands that everything that happens, doesn't mean it doesn't hurt, but one doesn't get angry. One doesn't lose it over it. One can actually, at certain times, learn to say thank you for those things. If we would be able to see the whole picture, our lives would be totally different. And that can only come through learning the works of Musar, the works of Torah, but understanding mainly that God runs the universe. He runs the universe. And things that happen to you, yes, you cause your own stress oftentimes. As we all know we do. Many, if I were to look at my life, just in terms of my own emotions, most of the nonsense that I go through, I can honestly say self-imposed. Yeah? And we all go through nonsense. Okay? If you have a rabbi, doctor, Mr. and Mrs. Mizo in front of your name, everybody goes through nonsense. Yeah. If you know that's self-imposed, but what happens is what's put in front of you as a challenge, and those things that you were given, as Zaina pointed out, different people are given different measures, different things. Those were given to you as your challenge. Life would be much, much easier to be able to take. And next time something happens to you, and you feel it's a negative, you say, I'll chalk it up just to the white side coming down a little heavier. It'll make it a lot easier to accept. Ladies and gentlemen, God willing, next...